Chapter 73.
Here we go,
said Inspector Bird, nodding at the monitor showing the view from the drone overhead. 16 greenish figures moved towards the house. The major knew that one of the figures was the sergeant leading the operation, but there was no way of telling who was who. The group split into two. 8 men moved towards the front door. 8 went down the side of the house. The infrared showed the men but didn't show their equipment. Their SIG MCX carbines, the 2 enforcers, or the ladders they would use to scale the side gate. The group at the front stopped and went into a huddle. The 2 men who would be first in would be holding bulletproof shields. Those behind would have their carbines aimed and ready to fire. The armed police's approach to operations was very different to that of the SAS. When the SAS went in, they almost always shot to kill, moving quickly and efficiently to double-tap the targets. Usually, a 4-man team was enough. They mostly didn't bother with shields or defensive measures, though they would often throw in flashbangs to disorientate the opposition. The aim was to neutralize the threat as quickly as possible. The police approach was to try to control the situation without firing a shot. The great British public was very much against the concept of the police shooting to kill, no matter what sins the perpetrators had carried out. Any police officer who fired his weapon was immediately taken off active duty, and any killing was treated, initially at least, as a murder investigation. When the police went in armed, they hoped to control the situation by shock and awe, by so outgunning the opposition that they had no choice other than to surrender. The 8 figures at the side of the house grouped together, and then one by one, they went over the gate. Gannon and Bird couldn't see the ladders they were using, but there was no doubting that was how they were climbing over. Once they had scaled the gate, they moved around the house in single file and gathered at the kitchen door. The airwave radio clipped to Bird's vest clicked twice. After a few seconds, there were 2 more clicks. The teams were on radio silence, but they could communicate by clicking the transmit button. 2 clicks meant the teams were in position and ready to go. Bird looked across at Gannon as if seeking reassurance that it was time to move in. The major flashed him a tight smile and nodded. Bird clicked the transmit button twice. Almost immediately, the figures at the front door and back door went into action, breaching both doors with the enforcers and piling inside. The major watched the greenish figures, knowing that the first 2 would be holding their shields as a defense against hostile fire, while the men behind would be sweeping the rooms with their carbines and shouting, "Armed police!" at the tops of their voices. That was another way the police behaved differently in armed situations. They had to announce who they were and give the opposition a chance to surrender. The SAS never announced themselves. They just went in, guns blazing. There was a flurry of activity in the front room and the kitchen. The 2 green targets in the front room were now getting down onto the floor. Things were more hectic in the kitchen. The 2 target figures were moving and then both fell backwards. As the major watched, the 2 figures twitched and went still.
"It's over," said Bird. "Come on."
They left the mobile command center and walked quickly to the house. The unit sergeant came out of the front door, his SIG carbine at his side, as Inspector Bird and the Major walked up.
"All clear, sir,"
said the sergeant. He was wearing a Kevlar helmet and goggles in addition to his vest and protective knee and elbow pads.
2 men in the front room surrendered without a struggle. The 2 in the kitchen went for their guns despite our warnings, both dead."
"Good job," said Bird. "I'll see you back at the Mobile Command Center for a debrief, and then we'll head on back to base. There's a forensics team on the way, and obviously professional standards will start an investigation into the deaths."
"Fucking leeches," muttered the sergeant.
No one liked the anti-corruption cops, least of all armed police officers who had been involved in clearly justifiable shootings. No matter the circumstances, once someone had been shot by an armed officer, professional standards moved in and removed the police involved from duty, cautioned them, and treated them as suspects rather than heroes. And a final decision as to whether action would be taken against the shooters could take months.
I concur with your sentiment, but perhaps better not to express those thoughts out loud, said Bird.
The sergeant nodded.
Yes, sir.
Who were the shooters?
Bird asked.
Neil Thomas and Bob MacDonald.
It was totally justified, sir. No question.
They knew we were cops. As soon as the door was open, Terry and Gazza went in with the shields. Everyone was shouting, "Arm police!" You'll see that on the body cam footage. But they had no intention of coming quietly. They were cooking or something, and their guns were on the table.
Heckler and Koch, 416s.
The major nodded.
The Navy SEALs like to use them.
They ignored our shouts to get down on the floor. Terry and Gazza rushed them with the shields and we moved in, still shouting but ready to fire if we had to. They grabbed their guns and moved backwards, trying to aim. One of them pulled the trigger too early and shot Gazza in the foot. At that point, we had no option other than to shoot. If he'd raised his gun, we'd have all been hit.
Bird patted the sergeant on the shoulder.
You all did good, don't worry. Professional standards will just be going through the motions.
I hope so, sir, said the sergeant.
Have you ID'd them?
The sergeant nodded.
They were both carrying American passports. I need to talk to Javier, said the major.
Let's do it inside, said Bird.
The two men went into the house. There were two Hispanic men sitting on a sofa. Their wrists had been zip-cuffed, and they were watched over by two armed officers.
Which one of you is Javier Silva? Asked Gannon.
The older of the two men nodded.
I am.
He was in his 40s, his jet black hair slicked back. He was wearing a suit that looked made to measure and a dark blue silk shirt. There was a heavy gold chain around his neck.
I want to speak to my lawyer.
You have a lawyer? Asked Gannon.
Of course I have a lawyer, and I demand to speak to him.
I need your phone, said the major.
For that, you'll need a warrant, said Javier. And you will need to talk to my lawyer.
The major leant over him and went through his pockets.
You have no right to search me, said Javier.
Actually, under the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, we do, said Bird.
The major looked at the phone, a new model Samsung.
I need the PIN number to open it.
Javier shook his head. The major glared at him.
Stop fucking around and give me the code, he snapped.
Javier looked up at him and smiled.
Or what? You'll hit me, you'll beat me up, you'll use a cattle prod on me,
he laughed.
This is England, my friend, not Mexico. Here I have all the rights in the world. So no, I will not tell you the number. You will have to get a warrant. Now stop throwing your weight around and allow me to call my lawyer.
The major held out the phone.
You can call him on this.
Javier chuckled.
You really think I'm that stupid? I demand that someone calls my lawyer.
You can do that at the station, said Bird.
He looked at the major.
It's not one of those phones with thumbprint recognition or facial recognition, is it? Because we could knock him out and get into the phone that way.
You need a password, hissed Javier.
Pity, said the major.
He grinned at Bird.
But I like the way you think.
The major patted the other prisoner down and took out his phone. Javier spoke quickly in Spanish, and the other man grunted.
I want to speak to my lawyer, he said.
Gannon tried the phone, but it too needed a passcode.
What are we charged with? Asked Javier. What offenses do you think we have committed?
There are two men in the kitchen with high-powered weapons who tried to kill my men, said Bird. That would be a start.
My security staff, said Javier. London is a dangerous city, and a man such as myself needs protection. But if they decided to protect themselves against aggressive policemen waving guns and shouting at the top of their voices, then that is their problem, not mine.
We both know what you've been doing, said the major.
Javier shrugged.
I want to talk to my lawyer. We both do. We won't be making any comments until our lawyers are present.
The major's eyes hardened.
How do you think Carlos Martinez will react when he finds you are cooperating with the authorities?
I'm not cooperating, said Javier.
Really? Seems to me that you are. and I know a couple of journalists who I am sure would be happy to write stories saying that a leading member of a Mexican cartel is being very helpful following his arrest on conspiracy to murder charges.
Conspiracy to murder who, exactly?
10 members of the security service and 4 of my colleagues.
Javier shrugged.
I notice you don't have to ask who Carlos Martinez is.
Javier shrugged again.
We both know how eager he is to see Diego Flores killed. I imagine he'd be putting the same amount of effort into having you terminated. And I don't think anyone in the UK is going to be that interested in stopping him.
You don't scare me, said Javier quietly.
Maybe not. But I'm damn sure that the thought of what Martinez is going to do to you will keep you awake at night.
He held up the phones.
Let's see what we have on these, shall we?
You can't touch our phones without a warrant, said Javier. But the major was already walking out of the room. Bird followed him. Once he was outside the house, the major called Giles Pritchard. The director answered almost immediately.
All done, Giles, said Gannon. We have Javier Silva and Santino Rossi in custody. There were 2 Americans with them, both killed. Almost certainly former special forces, guns for hire.
No great loss, said Pritchard. Any casualties on our side?
One of the firearms officers took a bullet in the foot, but it's not life-threatening.
Excellent.
I have Javier's phone and Santino's. Unfortunately, they're not prepared to give me the passcodes and are demanding to see lawyers.
If you have someone bring the phone into Tem's house, our technical guys can take a look, said Pritchard.
I could bring it in myself, said Gannon.
I think you'd be better off staying put with the police there so that you can be ready to move as soon as we have Hurst's location.
No problem, said the major, and he ended the call.
He waved at Inspector Byrd.
I'll need someone to run the 2 phones over to Tem's house, said Gannon. They have people there can get into locked phones.
The quickest way would probably be by motorbike, said the inspector. He used his radio to summon a police biker. While they waited for the bike to arrive, the major took 2 post-it notes from a white overalled forensic specialist and wrote down the names of the owners of the phones. The police motorcyclist collected the phones and sped off west towards Tem's house.